He does, and Salvi gets on top of it and drills it deep to left field over the bullpens, and that's a two-run home run, and Salvador Perez has tied his career high with 27 home runs, and the Royals lead 5-0 in the third inning.
Royals go on the win, 9-1. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you. Dusty on vacation as we just tag team, and it's like a relay, and he hands me the baton back so he can go on vacation after I return from vacation. And the Royals do win yesterday by a final of 9-1. The boys in blue are now 46-60 on the year, jumped out to that 5-0 lead, and cruise to the victory. 12 hits, 9 runs. Carlos Hernandez, a nice performance. 5 innings, gets the win. 2 hits, 1 run. Walked 2, struck out 6. Allowed just a solo homer. Josh Domont, Jacob Brintz, Tapia, and Ervin Santana closed out the game. And the Royals do get the win. And the highlights, Whit Merrifield was 3-for-5 at the dish. Salvador Perez with a home run, 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs. And Edward Olivares with a solo homer as well. Nicky Lopez continues to play well at short. He has not had an error in over 60 games, which is a record for a Royal shortstop in consecutive airless games. 2-for-4, hitting now .279 as the Royals get the win against the White Sox. So the Royals will be back in action again. Coming up, let's see here. It would be today, I believe, they're back in action, but I'll pull this up here as the Royals will come on now. Come on, computer. You can do it. There we go. Royals against the White Sox again tonight, as it is Daniel Lynch, who's pitched well his last two starts since being called up from AAA Omaha. And then the Royals will start a series with the Cardinals. The I-70 series will begin on Friday in St. Louis. And the Royals will play in St. Louis Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but close out their series in Chicago against the White Sox coming up later tonight at 7:10. Mike Matheny on the overall effort of his team and getting the win yesterday, 9-1 on the road.
Really good at bats all the way through, putting some pressure on early. And that situation I think we talked about, really good at bat by O'Hearn to put a ball in play and drive the run in. And then, you know, guys just kind of piling on after that. But the offense was relentless. Those kind of innings where you get to shut down, they come back, put more pressure on, and we've got the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. But we also had guys who were getting on base ahead of them and make things happen. Good base running. Today was a little bit of everything. Carlos set the tone, but you know, our defense, too, was just, you know, the play Michael Taylor made, the catch, the cutoff in the gap, the play that Rivera made is one of the better plays you're going to see. Just all the way around, it was just a great effort.
So the Royals do get the win as they improve now to 46-60. Local sports, let's see what we can find here. I'm trying to play catch-up on this because I've been gone. And let me see if I can pull it up here and update you. Go to ncksports.com. Let's see here. Tatum Seifert won the national championship in the AAU Junior Olympics in Houston. 6 athletes from Beloit are competing in that. Tatum won the shot put in the 14-year-old division on Monday. So congratulations to Tatum Seifert. Addison Budke finished 10th place in that event. She also finished 33rd in the nation in the 14-year-old girls long jump. And the 14-year-old boys shot put on Monday, Eli Johnson finished in 16th place. He followed that up on Tuesday with a 9th place finish in the 14-year-old boys discus. And then Tatum Seifert took 2nd place in the 14-year-old girls discus with a throw of 115-2. Also in the 12-year-old boys shot put, Griffin Johnson brought home 2nd place with a throw of 42 feet 9 inches. Still to come today, Griffin Johnson will compete in the 12-year-old boys discus, and Autumn Lorenz will compete in the 14-year-old girls javelin. Mika Jordan will wrap up the week for the Beloit athletes throwing in the 8-and-under girls turbo javelin coming up tomorrow. For full results, there's a link posted at our website, ncksports.com. The Athlete of the Week. Well, we have Athletes of the Week. The members of the Concordia Citizens National Bank K18 baseball team have been named the ncksports.com Cunningham Telephone Cable Athletes of the Week as Concordia CNB won the 2021 K18 State Baseball Championship last week in Lucas. They started the postseason winning the league tournament in early July, and then they finished 2nd place at East Regional. Despite a loss to Smith Center in the regional championship, they are able to bounce back in state tournament, beat Norton 10-8 in the first round, beat Phillipsburg 8-2, edge Clay Center 4-3 for the championship. The state title was the fourth in the Concordia CNB K-18 program's history. They won it in 2011, 14, and 18. They are NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone Cable Athletes of the Week. And last week, it was the members of the Concordia Chevy Buick Peewee baseball team who were the state champion. So Concordia has state champion in Peewee baseball and K-18 baseball. So congratulations to those two Concordia baseball teams. All right, Chiefs training camp is continuing up in St. Joseph, Missouri. Some of the observations that took place Wednesday, marked the second day of padded practices. There are some good things in one-on-one drills, including DeMarcus Robinson with an outstanding catch against cornerback Legarius Sneed. Also, the Chiefs practiced goal line plays on Wednesday, including one that led to a big man touchdown as Andrew Wiley, an offensive lineman, caught a touchdown pass from quarterback Chad Henney. And also yesterday, Patrick Mahomes and Noah Gray, a rookie tight end out of Duke, connected on a deep throw during a 7-on-7 segment. And Mecole Hardman hauled in a touchdown on the first play of team drills, and Hardman is supposed to step into that number two wideout spot behind Tyreek Hill, and if he can play very well, that gives the Chiefs a whole different dynamic offensively. There have been some questions about Hardman and whether or not he'll be able to rise to the occasion, but we shall see. Certainly with him and Hill on the field, along with Kelsey and Hilaire and others, the Chiefs have a lot of speed on the field, as we know, without Sammy Watkins, who's now with the Baltimore Ravens. And in regards to injuries, those who didn't participate yesterday were wide receiver Tyreek Hill with a knee tendonitis, cornerback DeAndre Baker, tight end Evan Bayless, safety Juan Thornhill was out. Also out was offensive tackle Mike Remmers with back spasms, and Nick Kaiser, tight end, was out, and offensive lineman Kyle Long still nursing the leg injury. And those are the guys that were out. Alex Okafor, a hamstring, Willie Gay, concussion protocol, left practice early yesterday. For a full recap of what took place yesterday at training camp in St. Joe, let's hear from Mitch Holtis and Matt McMullen.
All right, here we go. Day two of pads. Our live stream yesterday, we spent a lot of discussion about day one. What about day two?
So day two of pads, think about working out. Day one's the day you always emphasize, but day two is usually the day that's pretty tough on your body, because for the first time in 6 months, these guys went out there in pads, and it's brutal and it's hot out here, but day two went pretty well. And we talked to Travis Kelce just now, and he talked about some of the newer players on this team, and they're out there like, man, you guys do this? This is what we do every single day out here in pads? He's like, yeah, this is how we work. This is how we get better. So a lot of good stuff out there today that we'll talk about, but day two in pads, so far, so good.
But this day also was specifically looking at certain areas that are very important to the Kansas City Chiefs and any football team at any level. But one of the things I was most interested in early on in this practice session, running backs have to block linebackers. It's the pass protection drill that RBs hate. Linebackers love it. They get a four-yard head start, and the running back has to just somehow mitigate it. But we have seen running backs not make it in this league because they cannot pass protect. In this offense with Big Red, if you're a running back, any running back, you better be able to pass protect.
So when you come out to training camp, of course, the fun stuff are the touchdowns, the interceptions, things like that. But that's important, of course. But the really important stuff as well is the trenches. And that's not just the offensive and defensive lines. It's stuff like pass protection. And what's the next step for a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for example? We talk about him catching the football in this passing attack. But it's also pass protection. And we're seeing a lot of that out here today, stopping linebackers, trying to become a better pass protector. And you can really only do that with the pads on. So day two of pads, seeing a lot of that already.
And Clyde accounted for himself very well today, and he picked up a blitz when they went to the team period. Then the RBs get it back, because then the linebackers have to cover them on pass routes. All right, so now it's their advantage. There's no rush on the quarterback and the linebackers. So it's not a physical drill as much as the other one, and yet very important. Linebackers, we've talked about this before, must cover in this day and age in the NFL, or you're not going to play.
I've said it 100 times over the last year or so. The days of the thumper linebacker are over. You have to cover in this league at linebacker, and we're seeing that with guys like Nick Bolton in this offense, Willie Gay Jr. These guys have to cover to make it in this league, and some really good running backs on this team, guys like Jerick McKinnon, some great speed from him, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, guys that have proven they can catch the football out of the backfield. Great test for these linebackers today.
What else did you see today that impressed you?
Well, we're talking about individual drills. How about wide receivers versus DBs? And it's difficult in training camp because if someone wins, it means someone else on this team lost. So you'd love to see it when it kind of evens out. So there's one route where DeMarcus Robinson had a great catch in contention over L'Jarius Sneed. L'Jarius Sneed, the top rookie corner in all of football last year, great catch by D-Rob. But then a few plays later, L'Jarius Sneed picks off a pass on that same drill versus Marcus Kemp. So you love to see both guys winning over the course of this, offense and defense, everyone showing out. Also, speaking of one-on-ones, how about Trey Smith? How good does he look? Love the energy and the intensity of the one-on-ones for OL versus DL. Tershawn Wharton was a standout yesterday, looked really good in that area. Today, it was Trey Smith was the clear winner overall, just looking really, really good in those drills one-on-ones.
Yeah, he's physical, smart, tough, and it's kind of contagious to the rest of that offensive line. Now, the other thing that was impressive about this practice was the specificity in looking at a couple of areas. One was short yardage goal line. That's always something to watch in pads because they're thudding. They're not taking them down, not going live. You hit and release. But the Kansas City Chiefs, as good as they've been over the last 3 years, I think everybody agrees, Big Red included, if they can improve touchdown percentage when they get inside the 5 yard line, it could make this team even better.
You can always get better. Even a team that's been to 3 straight AFC Championship games and 2 straight Super Bowls can find ways to get better. And you mentioned it there with the goal line. And what I love about this team is they don't waste any time attacking these areas. It kind of reminds me of the defense wanting to get better in red zone. They were doing that way back in OTAs, trying to get ready or ready for the season better at red zone defense. Well, the offense was taking care of business today at goal line and looked really good. Think of all the different guys that scored today in goal line. Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman, Jerick McKinnon, Darrell Williams, and Andrew Wiley, a big man touchdown today. I looked really good in goal line.
I was watching binoculars. I looked immediately over to Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator, going, really? We're running the tackle eligible on day 2? Really?
Come on.
But it was fun to see it. And you mentioned all those names. The other thing Coach Reed talked about, and we saw it today in practice, to attack in the red zone, you have to attack the entire 53-yard width of the field. You have to have people that can do it. You got to hit spots and make the defense be honest. You're not late for your plane, are you?
I'm not, no.
Okay.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? It's fighter
real cool.
Jets overhead.
That's awesome. But you mentioned, too, defensively now, and we've got to bring it up. It was a topic of the offseason, and Spags brought it up. I mean, the Chiefs were last in the NFL last year in red zone touchdown prevention. They gave touchdowns up 77% of the time. You and I have done the math. We even put it out digitally that if you just reduce that by a third, all of a sudden now you have a chance to be vastly improved. And there were times the defense won today.
This defense was really good last year, really didn't get the credit they deserved. They held the opposition under 21 points 9 times last year, tied for the second most times of any team in the NFL. And you're right, if you find just a few ways to get better, they can take that to the next level. And we're seeing that so far here in camp. A guy like Tyrann Mathieu leading this group, knowing they can be better, bringing that energy every single day. And when the pads come on, when veterans like that are bringing it in goal line drills like this, your younger players, your guys like Willie Gay, L'Jarius Sneed, they're like, wow, we better bring it as well, seeing that throughout this period.
And another specific emphasis today was short yardage, not just in goal line, but out in the middle of the field. So third down in 2 situations, or third and short generally. And again, points of emphasis for this team on both sides of the ball. If the defense, let's just take the defense, they've been at the bottom third and forcing 3 and outs. If you just give Patrick Mahomes 1 or 2 more possessions, 1 or 2 more 3 and outs in a game, we know what that means from a numerical standpoint. But to work on short yardage, even out on the field, not just goal line, was important for this defense today.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about it. Yeah, if you give Patrick Mahomes extra opportunities, the sky is truly the limit for this team. And it wasn't just the short yardage stuff, because we saw a lot of short swing routes to guys like Jerick McKinnon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams. But also Noah Gray, once again, was really good today. And in a 7-on-7 drill, the coverage was really good on the receivers and the tight ends, but Noah Gray, like Travis Kelce has done for so many years, found a hole, a soft spot in the coverage. Patrick Mahomes rolled to his right and found Noah Gray deep down the field and just talked to Travis, like I mentioned, and he was mentioning, I can't wait for the world to see this kid because this guy is so good and he's figuring these things out. He has innate abilities that guys just don't have as rookies in this league, and we saw that here today at practice. I think the first preseason game, I think Noah will play quite a bit, and our fans will see a lot of it then.
And another rookie that has caught my eye the last 2 days now, because you want to see, can you stack him up? Day one, the pad, when he put the pads on, he was better than at any time he was without pads. And today he backed it up, and he's getting repetitions. But that's Mizzou linebacker Nick Bolton, the leader of this Chiefs 2021 draft class. A ton of reps here, but he's played better with the pads on than he did with the pads off.
So you want to throw these guys in the fire and see what they can do. It's a lot of information they're trying to absorb. Steve Spagnuolo just talked about that. It's a lot of different spots and things he's being asked to do in this defense, but he's really looking good out there. And you never want injuries to happen, but Ben Niemann and Anthony Hitchens missed time last week in practice, and that gave Nick Bolton opportunities to go out there and see how you can do. And he had interceptions in back-to-back practices, has looked really good both as a thumper and in coverage. Very encouraged by Nick Bolton so far, and now the challenge for him is to keep doing this over and over again. It's not as simple as looking very good the first couple days. Let's keep replicating that and building upon that, but so far so good for Nick Bolton.
And you mentioned Tershawn Wharton. He's flashed.
Yeah.
He's been the star of the show in many ways the last 2 days. His improvement to me has been vast, and I think if he can stay healthy, he's set to have a really good year.
The thing with Tershawn Wharton is you can tell when you watch him that he's not just relying on his athletic traits and his physicality. He has a plan. He has multiple things he's trying to do to the offensive tackle or whoever he's going against, and he's executing that at perfection so far. The one-on-ones are so much fun to watch. So if you come out here to camp, come watch these guys master their craft. Tershawn Wharton's certainly a guy to watch. What a steal that guy was from Missouri S&T.
Mm. Come and join us again this year with training camp, and we've had great crowds every day here. This week's been awesome weather. But just go to Chiefs.com/tickets/training camp. Think about going to a game. You have to have have your mobile phone, mobile ticketing ready, but it's easy, very easy. When you get here, it's awesome to bring the family here, make a little mini vacation for you, and enjoy St. Joe. And that brings up Mosaic again. Because not only here in St. Joe, but some outlying areas, they have been leaders, particularly in these last 2 years of dealing with the COVID pandemic. They will have a COVID vaccination from 11:30 to 2. That is August the 12th here on campus, not far from us at the Looney Complex. It's where the Griffins and Lady Griffins play basketball and volleyball. That's 11:30 to 2 at the Looney Complex from Mosaic. That's on August the 12th. But they're great, and you can just feel the tempo of their people here during training camp.
You certainly can. You can feel the tempo of the team out on the field. Only day 2 of pads, several more days to go, 2 more weeks of this. So if you haven't been up here yet, make sure to come up here and watch this team get ready for the 2021 season.
He's Matt McMullen. I'm Mitch Holtis. Every day, just stay with us every second of every day. Go to Chiefs.com. We got stuff loaded up just for you.
So there's your update. Training camp from yesterday up at St. Joseph, Missouri, as Missouri Western, of course, the host of that. And Mitch and Matt with that update for you on Kansas City Chiefs football. All right, speaking of football, Kansas State's athletic director, Gene Taylor, is now going to be one of the most prominent men in college football, at least in regards to his job that's coming up, besides being athletic director at K-State. Gene Taylor has been chosen to join the College Football Playoff Selection Committee ahead of the upcoming season. That was formally announced yesterday afternoon. Of course, why would this happen? Well, because Texas athletic director Chris Del Conte, who is on the selection committee, he, of course, now with Texas going to the SEC, there's a conflict of interest that exists with Texas departing Big 12 for the SEC along with Oklahoma. So the Big 12 turns to Gene Taylor as its representative on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. So Gene Taylor, if you have complaints about the College Football Playoff process and so forth and so on, I guess you can complain to Gene and everybody else on the Selection Committee. All right, your Olympics update. Some good things happening for Team USA over in the Olympics in Tokyo. The women's soccer team did not win the gold, of course, unfortunately knocked off in the semis. They did take home the bronze with a 4-3 win. The U.S. men's basketball team was down 15 midway through the second quarter of the semifinals, but Kevin Durant led the way with 23 points, and they're happy to have Devin Booker on board. He had 20. USA used a 48-14 run to beat Australia 97-78 to advance to the gold medal game where France awaits. And on the track, American Ryan Krauser broke the Olympic record twice in 2 attempts, sitting pretty on top of the list by taking home back-to-back gold medals in the shot put. Meanwhile, the U.S. men shocked the world by failing to qualify for the final of the 4x100-meter relay. They finished 6th in their heat. The U.S. women advanced to the final of the 4x100-meter relay for a chance at their 3rd straight Olympic gold. USA Baseball earned a convincing 7-2 win over South Korea, so they will get a rematch with Japan in the gold medal game. So Team USA Baseball has a chance to win the gold. So pretty cool stuff there. And let's see, what else do we have in regards to the Olympics? I think those are the main headlines as of here the last 24 hours. And you can follow along and follow the Olympics with all kinds of ways, various sites available for you to stay updated. And, of course, Simone Biles getting a bronze, competing in her last event. Seven total medals for Simone Biles, matching Shannon Miller's, I believe, seven medals as a USA gymnast. And for all those people that were freaking out, and I tried to tell people, it doesn't matter what Team USA and the pro NBA players do in exhibition games. And I know I said, should you be concerned losing a group match, a pool play match? Yeah, you should be concerned. But at the end of the day, as long as you finish in the top two, you move on to the quarterfinals. As long as Team USA wins the gold, it really, the exhibition games don't matter. They don't. And I tried to tell people about it, but yet I had people that were freaking out. I was getting texts and emails about Team USA is overrated. Team USA isn't a talented. Team USA needs LeBron. No, they don't. Team USA has plenty of talent. They have more than enough talent to win. The problem is when you put together a group of people in a short period of time, we're just finishing their NBA season, and then you add in Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Devin Booker. You add them when you get to Tokyo, so you've hardly had any time to practice. Cohesion is still important. Listen, if this was all about talent, why doesn't Kentucky win the national championship in basketball every year? Why doesn't Duke win it every year? Why doesn't Kansas win it every year? I mean, those three teams typically have some of the best recruits, right? Multiple McDonald's All-Americans. If it's just simply talent, we roll the ball out. Why do we pay coaches $3, $4, $5, $6, $7 million to coach? Because you need cohesion. Not everybody can score 20 points a game and average 20 points a game. You need guys to accept their roles. In fact, you could argue it's sometimes harder with so much talent to get them to work cohesively as a team. Now, is it easier in regards to, hey, we need a bucket, we can go ISO, or whatever the case may be. It's nice to have options. Oh, yeah, no doubt. Don't get me wrong. It helps to have talent, no doubt about it. But what I'm trying to say is it isn't just about talent. You've got to be able to get guys to work together, to accept their roles. You know, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal's not on the team because of COVID, but Devin Booker, Chris Middleton, Kevin Durant, they all average well over 20 points a game in the NBA, right? Do you think they all average over 20 for the USA? No, they don't. Some of them got to take a back seat. They got to know who is the go-to guy. The go-to guy is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant was great today. Devin Booker was great. USA rolls in the second half after being down by 15, complete swing, and they win by 19. And Luka Doncic of Slovenia, Slovenia was upset by France. So we were hoping, I thought it would be Luka versus Team USA, which I think would have been awesome. Instead, it's going to be France that spoiled the party. France versus Team USA for the men's basketball gold. So that'll be very exciting to see what happens. But Team USA has done exactly what they're supposed to do. For all those people that want to criticize Greg Popovich, well, we need college coaches to coach these guys, which to me makes no sense because these are pro players. We need LeBron. We need Steph Curry. We got guys that can go to the Olympics. That's why we're losing. No, they just need time to develop some chemistry. You just don't roll the ball out and you throw five guys together or 10 guys and say, hey, guys, go win a gold medal. It might have worked in 1992 with the Dream Team with Jordan, Bird, and Magic. The world has caught up to Team USA in regards to basketball, in regards to the fact that there are pros that are on other teams. Luka's on Slovenia. We've got teams like Patty Mills on Australia. We've got guys that are on teams across the world that are pros. Manu Ginobili did that for Argentina for many years. The Gasol brothers. We could go on and on playing for Spain. So the landscape of basketball across the world is completely different than 1992. And oh, by the way, 1992 was almost three decades ago. So while it was awesome that Jordan and Magic and Bird and all those guys did a wonderful job blowing everybody away and beating up on Angola, the times are different now. And part of the reason is because of that Dream Team in 92. That got people excited across the world about basketball. And that caused other kids to pick up a basketball when they were little or go into basketball or choose to play basketball. And now we've got European players in NBA that are thriving, like a Luka Doncic, like a Dirk Nowitzki, who's one of the first ones, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, who is from France, was a great point guard for the Spurs. We can go on and on. There's tons of guys that are from other countries. There's a melting pot of players in the NBA. So Team USA has plenty of talent. They've got certainly a talented coaching staff with Greg Popovich leading the way, who's won five NBA championships. I have never been one of those people to say the Team USA is done. They can't win the gold. I've not been overly concerned. I've kind of brushed it off. People that sending me this stuff being all worried about Team USA. I'm like, dude, at the end of the day, they're going to be judged on whether they win the gold medal. It ain't going to matter how many games they win or lose. At the end of the day, listen, Team USA can roll everybody and lose the gold medal game, and it'll be a horrible disappointment. So why not, if you're going to lose games in order to win the gold, so be it. If you got to lose a game, so be it. As long as you win the gold. Team USA is one win away from winning the gold. That's their job. They won by 19 today over Australia, a team that beat them in, exhibition game. And what does that exhibition win mean right now for Australia? Nothing. What is Nigeria still alive in this Olympic tournament? No. Nigeria beat Team USA in exhibition. Great story for Team Nigeria. Do you think Team USA really was too worried about it? No, because they knew they had more guys that were going to be joining their team, like Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Devin Booker. Those are three very solid players who, by the way, are so good, their teams went to the NBA Finals, and two of those three guys won a championship this year, playing for the Bucks. So I've never fully understood the knee-jerk reaction. We got to get away from falling into the trap of the talking heads trying to control your minds, sports fans. Think for yourself. If you're a basketball fan, you should not be overreacting to Team USA losing an exhibition game, because if you're a true basketball fan, you should understand better than anybody that it takes teamwork and time to develop a team and create a chemistry and camaraderie. Sometimes it doesn't click, sometimes it does. These other teams that are playing for their countries practice together a lot more, and they pretty much have their team selected way, way in advance of when Team USA has their team all put together. Then you factor in the COVID aspect, losing a Bradley Beal and then putting on some guys that aren't really all-stars, but maybe fit a role, and you understand Team USA is not that bad. So here we are. This is exactly where Team USA is supposed to be. And having said everything that I just mentioned to you, if Team USA loses to France, yes, it's a disappointment. It's a huge disappointment. It's not good for men's basketball in USA if Team USA doesn't win the gold. But right now, they're one win away, and they seem to be getting better. And that's a credit to Popovich and to the players and understanding their roles. And Kevin Durant's been the leader. And I said all along, they don't need LeBron. They don't need Steph Curry. They don't need Trae Young. They don't need those guys to win a gold. They've got plenty of talent on this team. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And right now, the recipe, which was very rotten when you tasted it in the exhibition play, now this team, it's a nice fondue. It just tastes good. Yeah. We're getting ready for some dessert if they can finish it off and win the gold. So it's not a matter of how many exhibition games you win or lose. It's not even a matter of whether or not you lose a game in pool play or group play. It's a matter of whether you move on to the next stage. That's it. You just got to keep advancing. Simple as that. And Team USA has done that. Let's see what else we got here in other sports news. Max Scherzer, member of the Dodgers, struck out 10, and they play the Astros and win. Anthony Rizzo stays hot, makes Yankees history in his sixth game, six RBIs, first player in Yankee history with six RBIs in his first six games. So that's been a good pickup for the Yankees. And let's see, Scherzer, I mentioned 10. And he struck out Jose Altuve three times. Dodgers won 7-5. Dodgers, of course, the rich. You know, look at here's baseball. The Yankees can go out and get Anthony Rizzo, and the Dodgers can go out get a Max Scherzer and a Trey Turner, two All-Stars, and even get Danny Duffy, who's going to be a reliever. I mean, it's just the rich get richer in Major League Baseball. Just the rich get richer. Whether or not that's going to turn into the Yankees making the World Series or even making the playoffs, I don't know. But I like to see the super-studded teams lose, I guess, except for apparently Team USA. Of course, that's our country, right? You got to cheer for them. The medal tracker in regards to the Olympics. Right now, China has 74 medals. They have the most golds with 34. USA has the most medals overall with 91. 29 gold, 35 silver, 27 bronze. But China has the most golds. Let's see. So 91 medals for the U.S., 74 for China. And 58 for the Russian Olympic Committee. So that's a rundown of the medals in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, taking place, of course, in 2021. Also, Dusty, I know, covered this yesterday. And by the way, NBA news, the Knicks, Julius Randle, reportedly getting a four-year, $117 million extension. The Pac-12 and the Big 12 have apparently had some talks. They have a new person in charge of the Pac-12. Bob Bowlesby has been talking to them. There are a lot of people that are impatient, that are wanting to see the Big 12 do something big. There are a lot of people that wondering why there isn't any like major news yet. I will say I've been very critical of Bob Bowlesby. I've been very critical of the Big 12 always being reactive instead of proactive. I still think that this is what this is. You're reactive. You're doing whatever you're doing now because you got Oklahoma and Texas that are leaving to go to the SEC. Having said that, I would hope and I would pray that if you want the Big 12 to stay in existence, that the Big 12's got to be reaching out and talking to a lot of different institutions. And reportedly, Bob Bowlesby has been talking to the Pac-12, whether or not there'd be some kind of alliance or even a merger between the Pac-12 and the Big 12, which, let's think about it. We've got 12 teams in the Pac-12. There's 8 remaining in the Big 12. That'd be a super conference of 20. Would they join? Would they merge? Would they simply just schedule each other to fill out schedules but not be actually joined at the hip? Perhaps that could happen. I don't know. USC could go somewhere else possibly because they've got a pretty big brand name, of course. Lots of moving parts that are out there. What about UCLA? If USC would go, say, to the Big Ten, would UCLA go to the Big Ten? There have been reports here recently, although there's nothing really to verify or solidify these reports, but talk about KU, that they may be going to the Big Ten, that it's imminent. It's going to happen in the next few weeks, that KU is going to go to the Big Ten. I don't fully buy that yet, but we shall see. If KU goes to the Big Ten, isn't the Big 12 dead? I guess it could be, unless the Big 12 is able to add teams and schools very quickly, or if they merge in with the Pac-12. If I'm the Pac-12, I would probably have interest in keeping KU in the Big 12 because, obviously from the basketball standpoint, but again, this is mostly driven by football, mostly, very much so. So I don't know where this is going to end. I do know that the Big 12, if they can somehow keep the 8 teams together, the 8 schools, then they might have some time to put something together, whether it be adding some teams to the American Athletic Conference, which I don't think really moves the needle much, or some alliance or merger with the Pac-12. But if they can stay together, then they're going to get a lot of money from Oklahoma and Texas because they own their rights through the 2024, 2025 years. But whether or not the Big 12 can stay together between now and then, I have my doubts, serious doubts. The other thing that we need to keep in mind is that the Big 10 will get a new TV deal after 2022, SEC a new TV deal in 2025. The ACC has got the worst TV deal in regards to money, even worse than the Big 12. So see if the ACC does something different in regards to the next TV contract. And the Big 10, a lot of people talked about how the Big 10, and Dusty's mentioned this, the Big 10, some people believe, well, the Big 10, they got to go get, KU and Iowa State, or they got to go get Notre Dame, or they got to go get USC. And as Dusty's pointed out many times on the show before, why? The Big Ten can just sit tight. I mean, as of now, they make the most money per school, bigger than the SEC. They have the biggest TV deal financially than the SEC right now. They do. The Big Ten has the number one TV deal. Number two is the SEC. Now, adding Oklahoma and Texas, SEC will probably go to number one. Big Ten could be happy and still be just fine as the second biggest. If not, maybe a new TV deal, they'll be right there, 1A and 1B with the SEC. So the Big Ten doesn't have to do anything. If there's anybody that has to do something, honestly, it's clearly got to be the Big 12. That's if they want to keep this conference together. So there are some reports and rumors. You've got to be careful what you believe. There are reports that KU will go to the Big 10 or the Big 10 will invite KU or KU is pushing to go to the Big 10. I could see it happening. From a football standpoint, I don't see what the big draw is. I do get the basketball point of view. However, I don't know how big of a factor basketball is in this whole thing. I feel like it's not that big a factor, but I could be wrong. So we'll let it all play out when it comes to conference realignment. We'll update you if there's anything new, whether it's new rumors or stories or speculation. I guess we can always throw it out there for you to consider and chew on. But as of now, the Big 12 still has their 8 members. And, of course, the SEC will grow to 16 and pick up 2 in regards to Oklahoma and Texas. And I'm going to see if there's anything new on Twitter before we sign off for today. Let's see here. See if there's anything else I want to add that I can find on Twitter, anything new or breaking, and it doesn't look like there is. And the Chiefs getting ready for their practice here today, and it looks like Tyreek Hill is on the field with helmet and pads for practice. Juan Thornhill back in pads and has a helmet. So we'll keep you updated on Chiefs training camp as your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas is our sister station, Z96.3 The Lake. Have a great day, everyone. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on The Sports Ticket.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.